Okay, we'll make a start. So you can see which session you're in. So if you're in the wrong session, last chance. So I'm Nick Kulikov. I look after product and pricing at Clevey. And today we're going to hear about the pricing of fairness. So really looking at granular pricing on retirement income products from around the world. And the presenters are both from PacRe. So we've got Hamish Wilson, who's based in Scotland. And often travels to the London office of PacRe. He's the global head of individual retirement at PacRe. And we also have Cindy Fong, who's recently moved back from the UK and is going to be based in Sydney looking after retirement incomes for PacRe in Australia. And so I'd like you to welcome them, and I'll hand over to them to do their presentation. Questions, we'll do questions at the end, so just submit them or we'll have the mic.
Great. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. So for today's presentation, we will cover off the important question of how granular pricing should be in the Australian retirement market. As actuaries, we tend to approach pricing from a very technical lens, but as the market evolves, it's important to put a societal aspect and consideration into it as well. So for today's presentation, firstly, I'll cover off the introduction and give an overview of how the different markets approach pricing currently. Then I'll hand over to Hamish, who will give a deep dive into each market and the different like pricing, complexity, engagement, and different trade-offs across each of the systems in pricing. Then we'll hand it back to me to cover off a survey where we'll survey the audience here around your views on where the pricing approach should go for the Australian market and what your views are on purchasing an annuity. So we'll use Slido for that. And I'll have a wrap-up session as well with key takeaways. So firstly, just an introduction. So specifically, the topic is focused on pricing for decumulation products in the retirement market. We have observed clear trade-offs to date across complexity, fairness, and long-term sustainability from different pricing decisions across the UK, Netherlands, and the US. And using those systems, we have used them as case studies for today's presentation. Questions around how precise is too precise, what is considered fair, and how does pricing impact the sustainability of the product, we will aim to explore in today's presentation. So firstly, a spectrum of the pricing granularity that you can go versus the different cohorts that get affected. So on the left-hand side, starting from the top, you can go with a fully pooled approach where that is the least granular approach. So using, for example, age only. So under this framework, you would be charging everyone the same price regardless of longevity. However, obviously with charging the same price, that means there's different trade-offs. Then moving down towards the next level of granularity, you can go with a more segmented pricing approach where you're using a few more factors, potentially some socioeconomic or lifestyle factors. So I've included age, gender, and occupation as an example here. And then under this segmented pricing approach, there are different cohorts which are priced fairly. So there is redistribution across specific cohorts. With our example, that's age, gender, and occupation. But still within those cohorts, there could be differences in predicted longevity, which you're cross-subsidizing potentially across. Then finally, with the most granular approach, that is the fully individualized pricing approach. So this is where you're incorporating health underwriting as well, typically quite detailed health underwriting, where you ask about the person's medical conditions, medications, etc., and using that, you're forming a view of their longevity. So under this approach, this is the most fairest for the individual, and under this approach, you are pricing based on the risk for each person. So as you move down from the fully pooled approach to the fully individualized approach, you move from a more simple and transparent system to a more complex system. And then with the more complex system, you do need more infrastructure. You do need a lot more engagement as well. And it does have implications around who would engage with the system as well. So firstly, a overview around the different focus markets we've chosen for today's presentation. So at Pacific Life Free, we do have global exposure across different annuity markets. So specifically the UK in particular, we've chosen as a useful case study because the UK historically has had long history of DB pensions and now is moving to compulsory annuitization of DC savings with the pensions freedom and soon move to default. So under this system, it's quite a useful case study. We then also have included the Netherlands, who historically also had DB pensions, but are transitioning to a collective style DC system at the moment. And then we've also included the US as a case study. Under the US, the system is much more complex with rules varying by state. Generally, they benefit also from a tax advantage system by state. Okay. So under each of these different systems, we do observe different pricing factors that are currently adopted and also it's quite interesting to consider and compare them. So I guess firstly, I'll explain the different legends I've used. So a tick means that, yes, it's currently used in pricing. The orange line represents that, yes, it is used in pricing, but potentially in the back end and not the front end. And the back end pricing here refers to pricing by the insurer or reinsurer and could be done at the scheme level or at an individual level. So at the scheme level, what we mean by that is like using occupation, for example, of that scheme for pricing, but not understanding the actual like individual's location, wealth or occupation in that pricing. So doing pricing on a whole rather than at the individual level. So that orange line represents use in pricing in the back end, potentially at the individual level or at the scheme level. And then across means no. So I guess firstly, with the pricing factors used, currently there's a mix of demographic, health, lifestyle, and socioeconomic factors that are used. What we've observed is that regulators can limit what factors are used in pricing. And I'll go through that for the UK and Netherlands where we see that. And then I think just one final key call out as well. I haven't reflected that historical mortality experience of the plan could be used as well in pricing in the table, but that should also be a factor that gets used as well. So firstly, looking at the UK at the moment. So at the UK, we observed that this system has the most granular pricing system at the moment, where a wealth of demographic, health, lifestyle, and socioeconomic factors are used. I think one key factor that stands out that isn't being used at the moment is gender. And that is because of the EU gender directive, whereby you can only price using unisex rates. So that currently is only used in the back end rather than in the front end. Occupation as well is available for use, but then I think after having so many other factors, the explanatory power isn't adding as much. So occupation tends to only get used in the back end and only sometimes as well. But otherwise in the UK, the market is quite developed and there is a impaired individually written annuity market at the moment where health underwriting is used. And with that health underwriting, data around medical history, prescription medicine, and the lifestyle and socioeconomic factors are collected. So that gets incorporated in giving a price for both impaired lives and standard lives for annuities at the moment in the UK. Then we move to the Netherlands, where there is a pooling system at the moment. And what the regulator there has done is limit the use of socioeconomic factors and health like specific information for use in pricing. So really, they've gone with a pooling approach there. And age really is the only factor which the consumer sees as being priced on. But then at the back end, occupation, geography, wealth, and gender does get allowed for as well. But at the front end, the individual would only see age as the main factor. And I think the main driver of that is because of the pooling approach which they've gone with there, whereby there's a really like cultural solidarity view at the moment where everyone should pool together, everyone should be treated equally, and hence the less granular pricing approach which has been adopted. And then we move to the US, which is kind of in the middle between the UK and Netherlands in terms of the pricing approach they've adopted. So they don't have a restriction from the regulator in terms of like using gender or any of the health or socioeconomic factors for use. However, they haven't gone with a very granular approach either. So typically only age and gender gets used, and then occupation, geography, and wealth is only used in the back end. But then they've shied away from using health, underwriting as factors. From what I understand, this is because it is quite prohibitive cost-wise to use that. And I think the volumes in the US market haven't really taken off for annuities as well. So they haven't really used health to date in that market. Then I think what really we should reflect on in Australia is what factors would be appropriate for the Australian market. As we are designing the system, should we go with a very granular approach like the UK has, or should we go with a more pooling approach like the Netherlands, or take somewhere in the middle like the US? And how do we ensure like sustainability depending on the approach? So yeah, these are questions we'll explore. So I'll now hand over to Hamish, who will do a deep dive into each of the systems.
Hi, everybody. Excuse me. So I'm going to do a bit of a deep dive into the UK first. And as Cindy said, we do have a fully underwritten individual annuity market just now. And all the main providers are providing this, and there's a few new providers rumoured to be joining the market too. Just as a bit of market context, and apologies, I might be repeating a wee bit from the last talk as well, but individual annuities have really ramped up over the last few years. They used to be compulsory in the UK. They fell off a cliff about 11 years ago when it was made non-compulsory, and now the volumes are really, really growing, about 7 or 8 billion pounds, so what's that, about 15, 16 Australian dollars, billion dollars last year, and expected to double over the next 5 years. And we're also introducing default solutions in the UK. The Pension Commission has a view on this, but actually the legislation's already gone through, and their defaults are going to be coming in from next year. Cindy kind of covered a bit. The pricing is complex. So there's kind of, we call it sort of three areas. There's health, lifestyle, and socioeconomics. And I'm going to do a bit of a deep dive into all of these. Gender differentiation is not allowed under EU law. As you're maybe all aware, UK is no longer in the EU, but we've kept that ruling, and we still do not allow gender differentiation. And there's a kind of market consistent health form to capture information. I'm going to show you a bit of that as an example. And then in terms of fairness, that's a big question, and we're going to ask a bit of your views on this later on. One of the areas that I'm going to cover next is we use postcode pricing in the UK. So I'm going to delve a bit into that, and we can discuss fairness in that towards the end. So let me do the delve into the UK. It's not working there. There we go. So postcode pricing. So it's well known that the mortality, unfortunately, varies by socioeconomics. But is it used in pricing, and should it be used in pricing? So insurers try to understand the impact of socioeconomics. And in the UK, they generally work with commercial companies that do sort of socioeconomic grouping. So there's the likes of Mosaic, Acorn, there are others. And these companies originally kind of collect a lot of consumer information, and they're originally designed for marketing purposes. Who should you write out to, what are people's preferences, etc. But they're actually a really good starting point to understand the different socioeconomics by postcodes. And they're used to fit mortality models in the UK. Topic in itself, I want to go through all the detail on that, but generally you take a commercial one and you fit mortality model. I can't share commercial information in this, but what I can share is index of multiple deprivation that we have in the UK, which is publicly available. And what I'm showing here is the CMI. So for those who don't know, the CMI is a continuous mortality investigation. They're a wholly owned subsidiary of the IFOA. And they do a lot of gathering insured data, population data, etc., and are able to show statistics. So what the charts on the right saying is there is a clear gradient of mortality by socioeconomic, this index of multiple deprivation. And I'm going to tell you a minute what all that means. And the pension annuities data set that they use, so this basically they collected annuity information from companies in the UK to do the analysis, you still see that gradient. You see less of a gradient and less of a... less high mortality at the lower socioeconomics, basically because there is a socioeconomic effect of people who do buy annuities. They are generally working, etc. So I'm going to go a wee bit of a deeper dive into this index of multiple deprivation, and I'm going to use my home area. So first of all, I will say, and so Cindy said, postcode pricing is standard in the UK annuity market. And they're very granular postcodes. They're generally around 15 or 20 households within an individual postcode. And the Dutch is similar. And those of you who live in Australia here, you'll know that a postcode is a much broader area in Australia. You don't have that same granularity. So again, I'm not going to show you this by postcode, but I can use the Scottish index of multiple deprivation. And there are similar indices across the UK. Funnily enough, another wee aside, each nation in the UK has a slightly different methodology for their index of multiple deprivation, so it makes it hard to compare across the UK. But they're generally based on income, employment, health, housing, access to services, and crime. And the index of multiple deprivation is kind of collected at a local area, which is roughly around 20 postcodes. So still quite granular, and still more granular than Australian postcodes. So what I'm showing here is just an example based on my own area. The first chart here is Central Scotland. I don't know if you might recognise it, but on the left you have Glasgow, on the right you have Edinburgh. So you can see just sort of the impact here. Now, the redder you are, the more deprived you are, the bluer you are, the least deprived. So you can kind of see that maybe Edinburgh is a wee bit less deprived than Glasgow. Doesn't make it a better place to live. Now, I live in a place called, a place called Lenzie. So Lenzie is part of Kirkintilloch, and you can see Lenzie's quite blue, so they decided to give it a separate name than Kirkintilloch, because that's what people in Lenzie are like. But I live there, and I like it. But what I'm making out, so you can see at a kind of country level, or this central Scotland level, you do have sort of biases towards lower and higher socioeconomics. But a real local level, you have real biases. And as you can see, you can just move round the corner in some of these areas, and you're moving from high socioeconomics to lower socioeconomics, and people actually get different prices in annuity income because of this. And it's up to about 10% difference in annuity income based on the lower high socioeconomics. So if I decided to take a wee wander and move house, a few streets, I could get 10% higher income. Is that fair? That's maybe a one for us to discuss as we go along. Now, as I said, insurers will use even more granular. So they'll go down to the postcode level of around about 15 to 20 houses, and it'll vary by insurer depending on what socioeconomic model they might use. So if you look at annuity quotes around insurers, you can see that some, by just moving postcodes a few, some will jump income, some won't. Disclaimer, I will not move house just to get a better indicator. Okay, the next part in socioeconomics is actually the amount of the pension. Again, I'm using a study from the CMI. On the right-hand side, you can actually see a table of annual income amounts. So these aren't very high, actually, income amounts, because they're kind of based on historic individual annuity sales in the UK, which were come out of much lower DC pots. But even in that small variation in income, the chart on the left shows that even after allowing for socioeconomics with the IMD measure, there's still an income element as well. So basically, in the UK, pot size just becomes a rating factor for pricing. So the higher the pot size in an annuity, the lighter mortality is assumed in an annuity pricing. And that's still on top of using some sort of postcode socioeconomic band. Quite interesting, although these are kind of quite small variations in income, generally what you see is there's less of a gradient with females than for males. And that's kind of historic reasons for who were the biggest income providers in households in, you know, historic days. This should change as it should over time. So that's socioeconomic pricing, which is individualized in a certain aspect based on where you live. But the next level of underwriting in the UK is actually to get really into the individual and with lifestyle and health underwriting. Now, we kind of in the industry sort of categorize it lifestyle being things like whether or not you smoke, which is a direct lifestyle choice, but also alcohol, which again is a direct lifestyle choice. And then we go into BMI and sort of blood pressure, cholesterol type questions, which I think you could argue could be considered health rather than lifestyle, but it's just categorized as lifestyle for it. Because basically your lifestyle does impact your weight, as they say. Now, maybe not surprising to you all, the biggest impact on mortality is smoking as a lifestyle question. And you can get incomes up to about 15% higher if you declare that you're smoking a certain level. For high BMIs and high alcohol drinkers, the income it varies again depending on the level of disclosure, between up to about 10% again. So if you're a smoker with a high BMI and you drink a lot, you start ramping up the annuity income there. Now, obviously, there's then questions around disclosure, false disclosures around these things. So that's a real area of interest for insurers. I'll just show, there's a lot of detail here, but I just want to kind of move into the sort of medical assessment. So these are the kind of granularity that you might have in lifestyle questions. So you know, smoker, it's not just yes, no, it asks you about what you smoke, how long you've smoked, when you stopped, etc. So you go into a lot of granular detail here. Again, a lot of stuff on the alcohol. And then cholesterol, again, is a lifestyle question. Then you get into the true medical questions. So just want to say that these questions are all captured on an industry standard assessment form. It's called the retirement health form, and it's generally done online and it's generally responsive. So everybody's asked these lifestyle questions at the start, and then on the medical questions you get the first question around, do you want to disclose any particular medical questions? And if you click that, then you dive down into the next level of detail. As I say, it's mostly done online, but even if you do it offline, you can click in preparing your form, and it will kind of cut down the questions. So the overall form is around about 30 odd pages, but you would only be going through all these 30 pages if you clicked every single disclosure here. If you've got less disclosures, you just narrow down. And I'll show you for an example for heart attack. Again, a lot of detail here, but this is, if you'd click that you've got some sort of heart problem, then you go into that next level of detail and it asks you all around your diagnosis, what your symptoms are, what treatments you're on, what etc. And they get a really good capture of information. As I said, this is a common industry-wide application form, so it's designed to suit the needs of every single participant in the industry, which makes it Some people might be interested in some parts of the question, some insurers might be interested in the other. So, and it makes it quite difficult to change going forward because you need everybody to agree. But it is, it's there, it's efficient, it's effective at the moment. So that was on the UK, and I'm happy to take more questions on that after. The Netherlands, as Cindy said, is the other extreme. They really have sort of solidarity in pensions, and they're basically the pricing is only at the age level in Australia. There will be, under the new reforms in the Netherlands, so just to touch on that, there's a lot of existing DB in the Netherlands, and it's moving to DC structures and collective DC structures. And under some of these collective DC, there's an opt-out into an individually priced annuity. Now, that individually priced annuity, I say, can only use age at the front end, but they might look at the back end scheme and understand the occupation and the socioeconomics of the scheme as a whole to influence that pricing. But everybody within that scheme will get the same price if they are the same age. If that makes sense. And where the UK has gone is really constrained, both under precedent in the country. The country is very, it's collective, it's sharing, it's pooled of risk. They really have that culture. But the regulator doesn't really allow it. Nobody's really pushed it and tested it, but I don't see the Netherlands going down individualised underwriting anytime soon. And then in the US, as Cindy touched on as well, most of the growth in the industry there has been around in the accumulation phase, where the guaranteed income is almost an add-on or an option in these types of product. They've not moved down the granularity route yet. That's not saying that they won't in future. If people are familiar with protection in the US, they know that there's actually really deep individual health underwriting. A lot goes a lot further actually than the UK does in that area. But basically, age and gender are the main products, because uptake's been relatively low so far. There's not really been a real push in that area. Again, you can take more questions on that later, but I want to give time for Cindy and her survey. But in summary, before we go into the survey, we can kind of look at sort of uptake engagement versus pricing granularity. So in the UK, as I say, there's starting to be significant uptake on lifetime income products. And I believe that is helped by the fact that people who know that they're in poorer health don't see it as poor value, because they get a better value by disclosing in the UK and become more engaged that way. And in Australia and in the US, not sure where that will go next, but that's part of the survey, which Cindy will now move on to.
Great, thank you. So if everyone could use their phones and log into Slido. So you can either type slido.com on your web on your phone, or type or scan the QR code, sorry. So the code is 3073508 and the passcode is AusAUS. Cool. So I will just start the poll. Passcode is AUS password and 3073508 on Slido. So I'll give 1 minute for everyone. So I can see that 23 people are logged in, which is good. Cool. So let's start. So we've prepared a few questions just to get your views on where Australia should sit on the pricing granularity spectrum. So first question, in your view, where should Australia sit on the spectrum, so 1 to 5 being the options. So majority in the room think that the Australia system should be moderately differentiated using age, sex, and a few other factors like BMI and smoking. Second place is lightly differentiated age and sex only. And then 13% only think that we should take the highly granular route. But interestingly, the minority think that the fully pooled approach or the fully individualized approach is the right approach. Okay, next question. Where do you think Australia will realistically land on the pricing granularity spectrum over time? So although in the previous question, most thought that moderately differentiated was the approach that should be taken, the realistic approach that the majority have selected is lightly differentiated, but followed closely by the moderately differentiated approach. Next is, so there is still a subset who do think highly granular approach could also be a realistic approach as well. But once again, the fully individualized approach and the fully pooled approach isn't the approach that the majority think the Australia system will take. Okay, next question. So what do you think are the key factors to consider when determining the appropriate level of pricing granularity for Australian lifetime income products? So any like qualitative factors which you think should be a key consideration? So starting to get a few responses. So fairness and consistency are key considerations coming through. So that's good that that point is coming through in the presentation. Other considerations that have been pointed out include societal expectations, whether it's compulsion versus voluntary. Also, there's comments around it should not just be for healthy rich people, other factors around whether an individual has control over the factor as well. So once again, linking into the fairness consideration. And a few people have also mentioned the Discrimination Act as an example as well. And finally, yeah, I think market size is another good call out in terms of how much people you want to kind of influence through this pricing granularity approach and which segments really you should be targeting as well. So all good responses. Okay. Next question. So rank these variables from most to least acceptable for use in the Australian annuity pricing. Okay. Majority of responses have come through. So in terms of the audience view, we have age, gender, smoking status, BMI, occupation, postcode, and then the health self-reported factors. I think what is interesting that I'll call out is on postcode. So I was actually expecting postcode to be slightly higher, maybe just because in Australia, postcodes are so much more broader, in defining because I think the average postcode in Australia captures around, 100 plus households. So that's quite interesting that it's fairly low here. But yeah, maybe perhaps using like age, gender, smoking, BMI, occupation are the much more familiar factors. That's definitely coming through at the top. Okay. Next question. So what guidance should APRA provide in setting pricing standards for the lifetime annuity market in Australia? Mix of questions and responses coming through. So standard questions and acceptable factors and maximum differential is coming through. So perhaps the influence of this presentation. Also providing mortality tables, governance, risk margin has been pointed out, any protected rating factors, and there's just general comments about being strict limits and providing guidance as well. Okay, then for the next series of questions, basically the question is around how much do you agree with each of the statements, one being strongly disagree, three being neutral, and five being strongly agree. So the first statement is around using postcode. If you know that there's a minimum of 100 households per postcode, should this be a rating factor in the annuity market? Is this like ethically acceptable? Okay, pretty evenly split, I'd say. So, not evenly split. So 50% believe it is acceptable. 50% are rated four or five. 29% are more neutral, and then about 25% disagree with the use. But no one strongly disagrees that it shouldn't be used. Okay, next question. So pooled pricing in Australian super funds creates unfair and undisclosed cross subsidies between members. So do you disagree with that, one, or do you agree with that, five? Majority believe that it is unfair to have pooled pricing. So about, it's shifting. So 40% believe it's unfair. But interestingly, after I've said that, a few people voted that they disagree that there are cross subsidies. So about 25% disagree, and then another 33% are neutral. Okay, next question, or next statement. So industry superfund members expect all members to receive the same annuity rate regardless of health status. Okay, so about 50% disagree with this, 33% are neutral, and the minority agree with this. So I think majority believe, I think this like really links in with how majority think that there should be a moderately differentiated approach. And yeah, that's coming through here. Next statement, so health underwriting will help grow a guaranteed retirement income market. Do you agree or disagree? Okay. I'd say a lot more polarizing here. Very, very even spread, I'd say. So, I think it could go any way. Like, health underwriting could help or couldn't. Okay. Okay, and final question, which I'm very interested in, is whether you personally are likely to allocate part of your retirement savings to a guaranteed lifetime income product. Okay. Okay. So, very interesting. So, I think slightly majority think that they would allocate their savings. But yeah, clearly around 33% in the room, won't be planning to allocate that. I would be interested in why you responded the way you did in that, question. So can you explain your reasons as to why or why not you wouldn't allocate your money to a guaranteed income product? Okay.
I'm assuming the person says I'm going to live forever. Well, do it. If we haven't asked what your choice was originally.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
It's awesome.
Okay, so for those who would allocate their savings, the main reasons are so that they don't run out of money, there's a peace of mind, safety net, and there's protection against longevity risks. For those who are against allocating money, there's points like they plan on live forever, wealth, assets, maybe, I assume they have a lot of assets and sufficient funds to self-manage. Low interest rates, I think I disagree. Like, we are in a kind of higher interest rate environment. So, like, for that person who responded in that way, if the interest rates were higher, I would question them on whether like they would change their response. Okay. Okay. And then final question is around what impact would more individualized pricing, so including health questions, have on your likelihood of buying a guaranteed lifetime income product? Okay. So majority have said it would increase their price. A few have said it could not impact their pricing or reduce it. We also have some self-serving responses, like depends if it was in your favor, or depends if it gives you a better income. Yeah. And a point around it adding friction, I think, is a good one as well. Okay. Okay.
So thanks for all your responses and hard work. I don't know if you knew when you came into the room that you were actually you were doing half of the talk yourselves, but thank you for that. We'll find a way of sharing some of this a bit wider. Obviously, you know, it's just a sample that's in this room, but really appreciate. I know we're running off.
We're a bit over time, but I suppose if there's a quick question, it is lunch, so you can sacrifice lunch.
Very interesting, thank you. I'm honestly astonished by the UK system. How does the allowance for smoking interact with it shows an incentive to smoke, essentially, the questionnaire. So my question is, how does that interact with the efforts to kind of to reduce smoking prevalence, especially in the UK, noting that there were some moves to further restrict tobacco and cigarettes?
So I suppose that at the younger ages, people aren't aware of this. So for the majority of your life, up till the age of, you know, mid-50s, you're encouraged to do anything that's healthier, and that'll give you a better insurance rate. And then at some point, you flip over. So I think people haven't really delved into, you know, influencing the younger people to give up smoking visits, because it is totally incentivized to be healthier at the younger ages. But I do get the kind of disconnect that's going on there, but it's just not really that widely known for the younger population.
Thank you. No more? Okay, just one more.
Thank you. Faye from USW. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. Actually, my research group, we provide Australian-based mortality tables by socioeconomic classes to allow for more granular-based pricing. And that's last year's summit. And this year, actually, after lunch, the session that we are providing health-related mortality, that's based on the ABS individual-linked Australian mortality database. So our research is exactly potentially enabling more granular-based approach. For any audience who are interested, welcome to the session later.
Bit of a plug.
Excellent plug.
Okay. Thank you, Hamish and Cindy. It was a great interactive session and great insights. Like, as already pointed out, like, really interesting, and it will be interesting to see which way Australia does go. So thank you.
Thank you.